Austin, Texas. It was a little place called Hamburger Dan's. I heard that old jukebox start playing a song about a truck-driving man. The waitress then brought me some coffee. I thanked her and called her back again. I said that old song sure does fit me, 'cause I'm a truck-driving
Bobby, a thrill to be chatting with you. I want to thank you for coming. And I want to go back, way, way, way back. When did you first start playing music? How did those circumstances happen?
Well, I first started singing when I was big enough to talk. I would sing along with the jukebox in my dad's grocery store.
Which is where?
In Concord, Kentucky, right along the Ohio River in Lewis County. And I would sing along with the jukebox in my dad's grocery store there when I was 4 years old. And music just came out of me. You know, Hank Williams was the only voice I recognized, and I thought he was the only singer that there was. Yeah. And I remember the day he died. I was listening to the radio, and I would always turn the radio on to listen to Hank. I'd always listen for him. And they played nothing but his records all day. And my mom was trying to explain to me, I was 4 years old, so she was trying to explain to me that Hank had...
Something's up.
Hank had died, and I couldn't understand that because he was singing on the radio. So I was hearing him sing, but I thought that was the end of music. I really did. But anyway, that's when I first got interested in music, but then moved along. My teenage years, Buck Owens come along. Buck Owens and the Buckaroos, Don Rich. Mm-hmm. Boy, that music really turned me on, and of course, then Merle Haggard come along, but when I graduated from high school, I come down to the Cincinnati, to the Covington area, the Northern Kentucky area.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a guitar by then?
Oh yeah, I got a guitar when I was 8 years old.
Oh, okay.
My oldest brother got me a guitar for Christmas, and I still have it, a little Roy Rogers guitar.
Oh yeah,
and it's almost looks like new, but I learned to play it. I've got the fretboard all wore down where I. Somebody could learn to play guitar from where
I
my fingers were.
I wonder how many of those dandy little guitars were sold, because it seems everyone had one. Everyone had one of those Roy Rogers guitars.
You know, there was a Gene Autry guitar, too, and they were almost identical, except one of them, you know, some of them had Roy Rogers on them, and some of them had Gene Autry.
Somebody made some money from them.
Yep, and I still got mine, and my mother could play guitar a little bit, and she showed me some chords. And so I was 8 years old when I learned to play. So anyway, I come down to the Northern Kentucky area after I graduated from high school, and I went to work on the railroad. I was a road brakeman. And back then, jam sessions were real popular. Every Sunday, there would be jam sessions at some of the clubs. And I used to go around to the clubs and sing at these jam sessions. And then a band that needed a singer was asking around looking for a singer, and somebody that had heard me at one of the jam sessions told him about me, so they got a hold of me. And about the same time, I got laid off on the railroad. So I got with this band. It was Red Jenkins. So I got with them and played at a place called The Apple out in Woodlawn, and was there a couple years and went over to the Boulevard in Springdale for 4.5 years, and then went over to a place called Julie's in Sharonville for a year and a half.
Making the Northern Burbs rounds there.
Yeah, and then ended up in the nightclub in Wilder, Kentucky. Opened that club in September the 8th, 1978.
What was that prior to? Had it been a nightclub that you...
It was an old gambling casino, the Latin Quarter.
Latin Quarter.
Yeah. It was the Hard Rock Cafe for a couple of years, but it had been closed. So we got it opened and been there 34 and a half years now. It's unbelievable the way things keep working, and playing my style of traditional country music is different than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Nobody else does it.
When was that, 1978?
1978.
Along the way, over these decades, were there any real tough times when you thought about maybe you'd have to close?
No, not really. After opening in 78, and things started picking up, and then in 79, I heard about a mechanical bull out at Mickey Gilley's.
Uh-oh.
Out in Pasadena, outside of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And R.J. Seaford and I went out to check this bull out at Gilley's and bought one that night. So that mechanical bull arrived in Wilder, Kentucky, in October of 79.
It's been there that long.
But when we were at Gilley's checking the bull out to buy it, when we were there, they were filming the last scenes in the parking lot, you know, the fight that went on in the parking lot with Deborah Winger and the guy there. There was a big disturbance. They had robbed the place and all that, but they were finishing up the filming. And, in fact, after they stopped the filming that night, Deborah Winger came in and rode the bull at Gilley's there after the filming had stopped.
The Urban Cowboy.
The Urban Cowboy movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the bull came in to Wilder in October of 79. The movie didn't come out till June of 80. So it had already gotten established at the club.
Mm-hmm.
It was already established, and everybody was loving it. But as soon as the movie come out, people had heard we had one. When they saw it on the big screen, they'd come from there, and there's a line up the street.
Mm.
To get in.
Now, did you have to have a special rider on an insurance policy or anything?
Well, no, not really. If you don't mind taking the risk, which I never did.
Uh-huh.
But insurance companies wouldn't insure them. They refused them. But it went gangbusters, and, of course, we wore out about four or five different bulls by now, though. Of course, the old original Gilley's bull, to change the speed on it, the operator had to change it. There was a gear on the back of the bull. It wasn't remote. You couldn't change the speed. Whatever speed that the rider chose to ride, there was no changing it. If it was too much for him, he flew through the air.
Have you seen waves of popularity with bulls and riders, or has it been fairly consistent through the years?
Well, it's been very consistent there during the Urban Cowboy craze through the early 80s. We had a line outside. So then I would be out somewhere and run into somebody, and they would say, well, I'd come over and see you, but I ain't going to stand in line. Well, there wasn't any lines anymore.
Mm.
So everybody thought there was a line, and everybody didn't want to come because they thought they had to stand in line. So about the mid-80s, it slowed down. Of course, we rode the storm, and then a country craze started again. You know, during the early 80s, the Alabama and these groups were outside of the traditional country
kind of crossover.
Yeah. So then Randy Travis came along singing the traditional country, mm-hmm. 1982 and On the Other Hand, and that started turning people on to country music again. Of course, then the Garth Brooks and Alan Jackson and all that came along, and that helped. There was a period of time when every guy in the place had on a Garth Brooks shirt, you know, and a cowboy hat, and everybody looked like Alan Jackson or Garth Brooks. So that took us on to another era. Then this ghost thing got started, and I tried every way in the world to keep that from getting out because I didn't want anybody to know about that. But Carl Lawson, who worked for us at the time, kept telling me about strange things that would happen around there in the very beginning when we were working on the place to get it open.
In 78?
In 78. Carl lived right up the street. He was 18 years old, and he was born and raised right the closest house to the place, just south of the nightclub, a little house where Carl was raised. And he told me he used to ride his bicycle up and down the street. It was a little apartment. We made an office out of it some time ago. We don't use it for that anymore, but some windows up above the front door. Carl would say he'd ride his bicycle past there, and he'd see a set of red eyes that would follow him when he went down. He'd turn around and come back, and they'd follow him when he went back. And he was telling me that stuff, and he said a lot of strange things going around here. And I said, what are you talking about? I don't want to hear that. I mean, I'm, you know,
I got a business.
I had already sunk everything I had in there. I had to get the place open, and I wanted to make it a good country music place where people like to come and dance and have a good time. I mean, where I come from up in Lewis County, Kentucky, up at Concord, around Dad's grocery store, sometimes these farmers would be in there and they'd be talking about a haunted house somewhere. be telling stories about things going on what would scare me to death. I wouldn't go near that house. Mm-hmm. There ain't no way in the world. Houses they talked about that they said were haunted, I wouldn't go near that.
Bobby steering clear of them.
So I didn't want anybody to know, and I kept it quiet for more than 10 years.
How did it get out then?
Well, Doug Hensley was writing short stories, novels, and getting some of them published, and it was horror stories. And one day he was reading a passage from a short story he had just written, and it was real gory and everything. And I said, well, there's a story about the club that's supposed to be for real that Carl keeps telling me it's real. Better than that. And his eyes got big, and he wanted to know more about it. Well, he come in the nightclub that night, and Carl happened to be running a bull. So Doug went to him and asked him about it. And he wouldn't talk to him because I told him not to tell it. Well, Doug would come back to me. He won't talk to me. He says you won't let him, and it kept worrying me to death. And I really didn't think that it would go through with anyway. It was just in passing. I never gave it a thought in the long run. And to get him off my back, I said, well, Carl, go ahead and tell him your story if you want to. I just don't bother me no more tonight. I have to sing. Don't bother me. So Doug wrote the book based on Carl's stories. And once Doug got the door open to it, and Carl had told him things, other people that worked for us started opening up and telling their stories. And Hell's Gate is the name of the book that Doug wrote. And
so other people besides Carl had stories?
Yeah, yeah. And they hadn't said anything about it either until Doug started investigating. And then there are, I think, 9 sworn affidavits that are in the book that different people that worked for me and people that just came in, mm-hmm. to customers. And they gave Doug their stories and signed an affidavit that what they had to say was true.
We're visiting with Bobby Mackey, who owns Bobby Mackey's, where some kind of out-of-the-ordinary things happen from time to time. And Bobby's got an appearance coming up this Saturday afternoon at the Maine Public Library downtown on Vine Street. We'll tell you more about that, but let's continue on here. What about you personally? Have you experienced some of these?
No. You know, I don't believe in it. I don't dwell on it. I don't connect with it, and I'm not interested in it. It's just one of those things that, you know, it's about the music for me. You know, when the band and I are on stage Friday and Saturday night with a full house and they're having a good time and they're not worried about no ghosts, and I'm not either. Mm-hmm. We do have tours to the basement, though. Anybody who wants to go to the basement, there's a well in the basement.
Are there stories to go along with that well?
There are stories to go along with the well. Farthest one back would be the site was a slaughterhouse around 1900 or just previous to that. And that well was used to drain the blood from the slaughterhouse into the Licking River. There was a tunnel. It goes down about 6 feet, and then it goes straight toward the Licking River under the railroad track. So then in later years, when the gambling casino was popular. Prior to 1948, it was the Primrose Country Club. And in 1948, it became the Latin Quarter. But in the 30s, you know, while Prohibition was going on, they used that same well or that same tunnel to boat the illegal alcohol up the Licking River through that tunnel and up in the basement of the nightclub.
How convenient.
Yeah. See, when it was a slaughterhouse, it was just a shed, but they had built onto this nightclub several times and had built where when the well come up into the basement. And they'd lock the whiskey there in a looks like a jail cell. But it was a big iron, just a brick wall, big iron door. And I've been told that the manager would send us an order for alcohol out of there. They had a guard at that door, and they had to have an order to give him, mm-hmm. from the manager in order to get bottles of
this is
liquor.
During Prohibition.
During Prohibition.
Now, is the tunnel still there?
Yes. Well, they had built a floor over top of it. And this is where Carl's situation comes in. And I was down there one day, and Carl and I went to the basement for some reason. I forget what. He had a flashlight. This floor that was built over top of this well was asphalt. And we go down there, and I noticed holes picked in the floor that I hadn't seen before. It was like a pickaxe just with this holes picked in the floor. It wasn't no, not a big hole, several little holes.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl got down there, shined the flashlight. And I said, well, what done this, Carl? What done this? What made these holes? He said, I don't know. And he wouldn't own up to it. Later, when he told Doug about what happened, of course, I got down there and shined the flashlight down through the holes, and I could see the mouth of a well.
Oh, it went all the way through to the open space.
Oh, yeah, it was right above it. And I didn't know it was there. I don't know how he could have known. Shining the light down there, I could see the mouth of a well, and had dry powdered dirt in it, like real powdered dirt.
Sandy dirt.
Yeah, and it had, from trains going by, shaking the ground, it had sifted it, and it had sunk down about a foot, so that you could see the mouth of the well, but it was filled in. So, anyway, come to find out what Carl told Doug that's in the book, something froze him in his tracks there, and it appeared written in blood right there, dig here.
Mm-hmm.
So Carl chopped some holes.
What's the most recent happening or story that you've heard from anybody? Anything in the past couple of years?
Well,
or?
No, you know, people finally quit talking to me about it. The Wanda K takes care of the tours and everything. People call her and she gives tours and lets people spend the night.
You're real busy on Halloween?
People come. Oh, yes. But people come from everywhere. We've got bookings as far as September this year already. People want to come and spend the night. And Wanda fields all the stories and the questions, and I don't deal with it. But, you know, through the years, I used to hear it a lot. We used to get lots of times in the ladies' room, the women would come flying out of there. The water would come on by itself in the sink. Commodes would flush by themselves. So I don't know what that was about, but that used to happen a lot.
Let's talk music again. Who are some of the acts and folks who have been through your place?
Well, we've had several back through the years. Had George Jones. Had Merle Haggard back in the early 80s. Had
either one of them sober?
Well, George had just got out of the hospital when I had him. He was in the hospital down in Alabama. And the Adams boys, Don and Gary Adams, had been playing music with him. They're from up here around Hillsboro. So they knew I had the club, so they called. So my daughter knocked on the bedroom door early one morning and said, Daddy, George Jones is on the phone. I said, oh, yeah. So sure enough, George was just getting out of the hospital and needed to work. So I booked him within 10-day notice and ended up having him at the nightclub twice and had him out at Stone Valley. Used to have a Western barbecue every summer. We had a Western barbecue up there at Stone Valley off of 74. And I had George up there, too. But anyway, I don't know. We booked a lot of them. Johnny Rodriguez and Gene Watson and Mo Bandy and on. Freddie Hart was there once.
And how often do you play?
Every Friday and Saturday night.
Friday and Saturday. How long has that been going on? Since the late 70s?
Ever since I opened the doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a period of time there in the beginning, we were open 5 nights a week. 5 and sometimes 6. And I sang every night. You know, it never gets old. Traditional country music is just never gets old.
Timeless, yeah.
Never gets old.
You'll be singing on Saturday afternoon at the library. How'd this come about? At the main library on Vine Street downtown?
Well, they wanted us to come over there. I'm going to be doing a solo with just my flat top. I'm going to sing some with my flat top. I'll be doing some songs I wrote and some songs that's going to be on my new CD I'm working on. But, you know, they wanted us to come over and talk a little bit about the ghosts and about songwriting and play a few songs.
It's been a pleasure. Too long. I really am glad you came by and were able to catch up with this, Bobby.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bobby Mackey, catch him at the Maine Public Library this Saturday at 1 o'clock for songs and storytelling. Should be fun. Bobby, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Brian O'Donnell.
The waitress then brought me some coffee. I thanked her and called her back again. I said that old song sure does fit me, 'cause I'm a truck driving man. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land.
jukebox, and I'll play the truck driving man. I'm lying back aboard my old semi, and then like a flash I was gone. Got them old truck wheels rolling, and I'm on my way to San Antone. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'll put a quarter in the jukebox, and I'll play that truck driving man. Stand alive.